The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello and welcome to this week's Yes to Life show. The show's named after the charity Yes to Life that supports people with cancer in understanding and accessing integrative medicine. I'm Robin Daly, your host and the founder of the charity, and each week I talk to people in the field about some aspect of integrative medicine. This week's no exception, and I'm talking to Dr. Sharif Ibrahim, a doctor with a background and long career in conventional medicine, who has recently retrained and switched to focus on functional medicine for chronic disease, particularly in the over 50s. He has a particular interest in supporting people with cancer. I'm speaking to Dr. Ibrahim over FaceTime at his clinic in Weybridge. Hi, Dr. Sharif. Many thanks for coming on the Yes to Life show today to talk about your work and about cancer from a functional medicine perspective.
Thank you very much indeed, Robin, for inviting me today. And it's a great pleasure for me to be with you today. And I would like really to say hello to your audience all over the world. Okay. And I hope we are going to have a little bit chat on functional medicine and cancer. And I hope that is going to be useful for your audience.
I'm sure it will be. Okay, I'd like to start out by asking you about what must have really been a massive change of direction for you when really, quite recently, after a long and successful career working within the NHS, you decided to set up shop on your own as a functional medicine practitioner working from Weybridge in London. So what prompted you to leave your colleagues and the NHS?
That's really a very interesting question, and I think it is two sides of the answer. One side is related to a personal issue, and the other part is due to a professional issue.
Okay.
And I think the personal issue was actually a time, a long time ago, about 20 years ago, when I went into poor health. And the professional part is regarding my management to patients with chronic diseases.
Right.
And I thought probably I might be able to do a better service if I can modify my practice, which I used to do in hospital for over 35 years.
Right.
So coming back to the personal one, actually I was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very fortunate to be in the hospital, and that is more than 25 years ago when it was in my 40s.
Right.
And I collapsed in the hospital one night while I was on call.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very lucky to be there, and my colleagues took me to the theater immediately because I have had a big bleed into my thyroid gland.
Right.
And I was almost suffocated.
Mm.
So they did the operation, and then another couple of operations because I bled again and again. And then I waked up one morning, you see, in my own intensive care unit in the same hospital where I used to work. Mm-hmm. And I found myself there, and I said, this is not good enough.
Right.
Yeah. And since that time, I started thinking about how can I improve my health. But unfortunately, I haven't got that much information about health. I know everything about disease, but I don't know anything about health because, for example, actually nutrition in the medical school, I haven't had more than one or two lectures on nutrition. So I don't know anything. So I started just like anybody else, and I built myself gradually, and I built my energy gradually until I have celebrated my 100th marathon 1.5 years ago.
100.
And I have done 123 okay. marathons at that time. And just actually to reflect on my energy level at that time, actually I was not able to walk to the train station, which was half a mile away from my house.
Wow.
And now in my 60s, actually, I was doing too many marathons. You see, so that's really very interesting. So, and that actually reflects, you see, health and fitness and these things had got nothing to do with age. The professional part of it is actually I see my patients and myself getting too much frustrated because we are not getting anywhere with the management of chronic diseases, such as high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, even cancer. You see, they're all metabolic diseases, and we're not really doing very well about their management. And this is why I thought I should really try to find out a better solution for these conditions.
Right. Okay. Well, that's very clear. And it's interesting that the thing that you actually relied on the NHS for in order to save your life was, of course, it was a technical problem. It was an acute issue, which, of course, the NHS are rather good at, I think. But yes, as you say, this area of chronic disease, there's not a lot of progress being made.
Yes, that's true. And I think the main reason for that is because actually that was what I have found out. You see, we are asking the wrong question.
Right.
We are asking, actually, if you come to see me in the hospital few years back, the main question in my head would be, what is the problem? You see, what is the diagnosis? What is the diagnosis, you see? Mm-hmm. And by the time when I find out the diagnosis, then I try to match this diagnosis with a pharmaceutical agent that is adopted actually or put to deal with this condition. Right. And by doing that, then my job is almost complete. I prescribe this drug or medicine, and my job is done altogether, you see. But now I don't really think too much about what, and I think a lot about why.
Right.
Why this person or this patient has developed these symptoms or this disease, you see. And I think by finding out why, then I would be in a better position to do something about the disease. Because in the first instance, when I find out what is the disease, then, and I give the pharmaceutical agent, then the disease actually continues to progress, because any chronic condition is condition for life, diabetes for life, high blood pressure for life, you see. So the disease progresses with time and cause complication. And that is not really what the doctor or the patients would like to be the cause. Now, when I find out why this person has have these symptoms or this disease and do something about it, that is going to help the patients quite significantly.
Okay, well, look, we can go into that a bit more with the next question, I think. So I was going to ask you, for listeners who are not familiar with functional medicine, perhaps you could highlight its most important features and go on to tell us a bit about the training you've received.
Yeah, the main feature of functional medicine, actually, it is a holistic approach. We look at the whole person altogether, not like, say, conventional medicine is very, very fractionated into a very small specialties. Now it has reached even the stage of having say, one surgeon who's doing the left knee and another surgeon is doing the right knee. You see? You see? And when you refer the patient to the wrong surgeon, they're saying, I'm sorry, you see, I'm a right knee. I'm not a left knee. You see?
It's about as ridiculous as that, unfortunately.
Yeah, yes. And the problem, you see, the body is one unit, and the body is interconnected. It's just like a web-like, really, structure. You see, what has happened in one part will have a lot of percussion on the other parts as well. And the same process that created disease, you see, would really affect many parts of the body.
Mm.
So it makes sense when one doctor is going to look after the whole body. It makes a lot of sense when one doctor is going to look after the whole body.
Mm.
And yes, actually, we need the high specialty. But the high specialty sometimes, you see, sometimes is required. You see, when there is something which needs a very specific treatment,
yes,
that is required. That is highly required as well. But I think in terms of chronic disease, actually need really a generalist rather than a highly specialized person.
Mm-hmm.
You probably need the highly specialized person for advanced conditions and advanced complications that require a specific, really, treatment.
Yes.
In functional medicine, it looks at the whole person. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, it looks at the person at cellular level. You see, and there is actually, if you can look at it like, say, there is one disease, and this disease is the dysfunctional cell. When the cell loses its normal function, it becomes dysfunctional.
Yes.
And this is the beginning of the disease. Because if you can see conventional medicine, there are something like thousands of diseases. And each disease has got a specific treatment. But in functional medicine, it simplifies everything down to a cellular level and it to the function of the cell. You see? Mm-hmm. You can think of it like, say, it's one disease. All the diseases is like one disease.
Right.
That's got two causes. And one of the causes is deficiencies, and the other cause is toxicity.
Right.
You see? So most of the patients are coming, and this is what I'm currently doing. I just try to look into their system and find out which system has gone out of balance. And then my work will try to find out, is it due to something which is missing?
Mm-hmm.
And I need to put this thing into the system to function better? Or is it due to something which is intoxicating the system and not helping the machineries of the cell, you see, to work as it should do?
Right.
And by correcting this or this, then the system starts working at optimal level.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when people become healthy.
Right. So this is really capitalizing on the body's natural ability to function as well as it can if you give it the right environment.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And because you see, if you can think about, the body is made up of billions of cells.
Yes.
And then a group of cells, they're doing one function. And then say, for example, somebody who is not able to breathe because his lungs are not working.
Mm-hmm.
So the lung is going to be the primary system which is out of balance, you see?
Yeah.
But the lung is not working because it's probably there is an allergy, which is causing inflammation, blocking the lung passages,
right?
Like asthma, for example. So you try to find out what are these allergies and take them out, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And then this is going to allow the passages of the lung to open up and the breathing to happen. So, and that is going to stop the problem altogether, forever.
Right.
Not like, say, you are seeing these patients with asthma coming repeatedly with these symptoms of narrow, they call it bronchospasm, of narrow air passages,
mm-hmm.
and they start wheezing and they start having difficulty breathing. And we give them something which is going to temporarily open up the respiratory passages.
Right.
And then they have to take these medicines continuously, because they need to keep their passages, their respiratory passages open.
Yeah.
So that's the problem, because here you are making the patient dependent completely on medications for life.
Yeah.
While there, you are taking the problem which is causing, the agent which is causing the problem, you're taking it out, you see? And so this patient is going to stay undisturbed or untroubled by this problem for life as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, yeah. And just tell us a little bit about functional medicine training, what you've done in order to gain these new skills.
It's a huge really program organized by Institute of Functional Medicine in America, in the US. So there is a big main module that is going to give you the basic of functional medicine. And six other advanced modules, you see, practical mm-hmm. modules.
Right.
Actually, you need to take this through number, probably a couple of years at least, actually, to complete, because you can do probably a couple of modules per year. And then I think you need probably 2-3 years to complete the six modules plus the big functional medicine module.
Right.
And these modules, including the immune system, which is covering the immune system of the body, the energy system, the cardiometabolic system, the GI, the gut, and the hormonal system, and the detoxification system. So these are the six main modules,
mm-hmm.
together with the big module, which is the including all these sub modules in a big just to introduce people into functional medicine.
Right.
The beauty of that, actually, functional medicine puts you into a very high state of learning, because for me, actually, when I have taken my basic medical training in the medical school, actually 40 years ago. At that time, you see, the biochemistry, the molecular biology, the physiology, these are the main subjects now you have to study for doing functional medicine, has been in a very, very primitive state.
Mm.
And there is quite a lot of developments that took place, you see, over the last 40, 50 years.
Right.
So now I have to go back again to study from scratch.
Right.
You see, physiology and biochemistry and molecular biology. And that is really very helpful. That is really, as if actually I just went through the medical school again.
Yeah.
And then I just learned the other sciences like allergies and to complete my training in functional medicine. But I'm really very, very glad. Actually, I have gone through these stages, and I think my knowledge level has gone up quite dramatically compared to the time when I was doing a conventional doctor job.
Yeah.
And I have to keep up with the knowledge, because most of functional medicine is based on advanced really science.
Mm.
You have to keep up, because things now are happening every day. You see, there's quite a lot of work coming out, you see, and you have to keep up with that, otherwise you'll be obsolete.
Mm. Well, that's a very good thing to hear. All too often, patients are very frustrated by reading up on the latest science and realizing that it's completely disconnected from what's actually going on down at the hospital. I think you just described maybe why.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was going to ask you one thing about that, just out of interest. I'm just wondering if you're still in touch with colleagues in the NHS, and if so, what do they make of what you're doing?
Yes, I'm still in touch with my colleagues, and I think the NHS and the healthcare system, the conventional care system, is quite really excellent, actually, in dealing with acute cases and infections.
Hmm.
There is no doubt at all. You see, actually, the NHS has been rated the first or the best really service in the world, actually, last year, 2017.
Right.
And actually, this is the best service in the world in dealing with acute care.
Right.
No doubt about that. But I think functional medicine can work with conventional medicine to cover a lot of really work together in case of chronic conditions. Yes, I mean, functional medicine deals with why, and conventional deals with the symptoms. But I think, yes, they can work together just to help various sort of patients suffering with chronic conditions. My colleagues, actually, they comment that is good, but they think that is probably not applicable, because most of the time, you see, when I see my patients, it takes really quite a long time to see one patient. So, for example, one patient cost me nearly about 4 hours, actually, of preparations and work to see them. I need 1 hour, actually, to prepare for the case. I need 1 hour to prepare for the case. And then I need to see the patients in 1.5 hours at least, 1.5 to 2 hours. So these are at least about 2.5 hours or 3 hours. Yeah. And then I need another hour to complete the report about the patient.
Right.
While previously when I was working in hospital, I could see 20 patients in the morning session. Now I can hardly see more than 2-3 patients a day.
Right. Yeah.
And I think this is what the patient appreciate, because they appreciate that now they have been given enough time to express themselves, to say what they would like to say.
Yeah.
And to tell about their conditions in details, you see, and they feel that the doctors is listening to them.
Okay.
That's one thing. The other, even before they come to the consultation, I normally send them a questionnaire that is going to take them about 2 hours to 3 hours to complete.
Right.
And by the time when I receive the questionnaire back, you see, it takes me about 1 hour to analyze the questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of time involved in seeing every single patient in functional medicine. The good thing about functional medicine, it's a partnership between the patient and they call it patient doctor patients therapeutic partnership, and start by telling back the story to the patient, because the patients, when they put all the information about their case, you see, in the questionnaires,
yes,
or they say it in the clinic, then they would like their story to be retold again.
Right.
To stressing the important factors that has gone wrong during the process of getting the disease. Because the disease does not happen overnight.
No.
The chronic disease does not happen overnight. It takes many years. For example, hypertension takes about 10 years to happen. Diabetes probably 20 years. Dementia takes about 45 years to form. So the chronic disease does not happen overnight. It takes many, many years to happen. And so when you retell back the stories of the patient, these are the factors which were predisposing you to the disease, and these are the factors which has triggered the disease to happen, and these are the factors which has made the disease to continue happening all the time, you see? And then by doing that, you see, there is really... you create really a very good relationship with the patient and a trust, you see, which is going to help the patient recovery and the patient healing.
Right. Yeah, I can see that's all very important. But as you said, that your conventional doctor colleagues are thinking that, well, this is just not a tenable way of working within the NHS. But it'd be interesting to actually know whether the patients who they give, you know, 10-minute appointments to, whether the amount of care that they end up having actually is maybe far greater than the amount that they get from you, because they actually maybe get the situation resolved properly rather than needing continuing and probably more extensive care as they get older.
Yes, but I think they think that it is not cost-effective, because they think if you are a doctor, you're going to see about 3 patients a day maximum.
Yes.
This is not going to be cost effective, because the workload in the hospital is quite big, you see.
Yeah.
And so you need to see as many as possible.
Yes.
But I think it is going to be cost effective for long term.
Yes. Yes.
Because when you see patients properly and you treat them and you resolve their conditions for good, then they're not coming back anymore.
Exactly. Exactly.
But when you see the patients and you give them really little time and you're not really resolving the problem, they keep coming all the time.
That's right.
And this is a problem. And this is the problem. And this is actually what has created the chronic disease epidemic. The other thing, which also I think is going to resolve the problem or to help reducing this chronic disease epidemic, is to see patients in group.
Right. Yes.
And this is what I'm now doing. I see patients one-to-one and I see patients in group.
Yeah.
So these group patients, you get something like 20, 30, 40, 50 patients together. I've got probably similar conditions, metabolic disease or whatever.
Yeah.
And you put them together in one group. And the benefit of this group, they are going to get the information, which is going to help them to get better.
Yes.
And they're going to get they're going to share experience. Yes. And they're going to support each other.
That's brilliant.
And by doing that, I have found these groups are really making great results.
Yeah.
I mean, many times I see the groups are making results even more than one-to-one.
Fantastic.
Really, patients' consultations.
Yes, that's interesting.
So this is what is going to make functional medicine really cost-effective long-term, because you can see patients as groups and you can see them one-to-one, and you are going to deal with the disease for good.
Mm.
Not like, say, dealing with the symptoms of disease that is going to continue forever and the patients continue to deteriorate with time and to have complications. And this is what I have found be a big problem, actually, with most of the patient, because they feel frustrated. They're coming to the hospital and they wanted to get better, but by the time when they go for months and years, they're not. And this is the cause of their frustration.
Yeah, well, and rightly so. Okay, very interesting, and I love that group approach as well. This is something I've heard Dr. Rangan Chatterjee talk about as a way of addressing the need for dealing with more people. So very interesting. Okay, now can we come round a bit to cancer itself? I mean, a topic that comes up very often on the Yes Life Show is about the origins of cancer, or the way it's viewed as a disease, and in conventional circles, it's been firmly established as a genetic problem for decades now. With conventional researchers, they're only just beginning to open the door a tiny crack to the possibility of treating it as a metabolic problem. So this is a sort of chicken and egg debate between genetics and metabolics, with both sides claiming they're addressing the root cause of cancer and that the other thing is simply a side effect. Could you first give a very top-line description of the differences between these two perspectives? And then tell us how you see it.
Thank you. This is really a very important and crucial point, which we should really highlight. Actually, before I say anything, I would like to say, you see, in cancer, especially, I think conventional medicine and functional medicine, they can work together, hand in hand, you see, to support these patients that needs a lot of support.
Okay.
Yeah. The question is genetic or metabolic.
Right.
And I think if you look at it, you look at cancer, you probably look at cancer at upstream, I mean looking at the cause, or you can look at it at downstream, which is the effect.
Right.
What has happened up the stream to cause some problem down the stream.
Okay.
You see? So the upstream is the metabolic problem. What has happened downstream is the genetic problems, the genetic mutation. Because you see, when you look at the cell has got two different parts. The central part, which is the nucleus, which contains the genes,
mm-hmm.
and then it has got the cytoplasm, which is the liquid part which contains the other organelles, including the very important organelle, the mitochondria, the energy-producing organelle. You see?
Yes.
So what has happened, has happened is a metabolic condition affecting the energy generation or energy production in the cell, you see? And that eventually caused the genetic mutation. So genetic mutation happens downstream, you see? But the initial problem took place upstream, which is the metabolic. So in this context, you see, there are so many research. The very famous, highly quoted, really, research is the research which looked into the, you're talking about, which is the egg and which is the chicken.
Yes.
They took the nucleus of a normal cell and they put it into a cancerous cytoplasm.
Yeah.
And that has grown into a cancerous cell. But they took the cancerous nucleus into a normal cell and it grew into a normal cell.
Right.
So that confirms, you see, the problem, the main problem is a metabolic problem that is happening in the cytoplasm and mainly in the energy production system.
Mm. So look, can we just go back over that, because it's very important what you've just been saying there, that piece of research. That was, I think it's Mina Bissell's work, isn't it, with a nuclei being transferred. So putting a nucleus, which has already got damaged genes in it, into an environment in which the energy production is working just fine, actually results in a healthy cell. But if you put a healthy nucleus into a damaged energy production system, it becomes cancerous.
Cancerous cell, yes,
yeah,
that's right.
So that's very important. So that's actually
saying, this is a landmark, really, study.
Yes.
Which confirm, you see, cancer is more like a metabolic disease rather than a genetic disease.
Mm, okay.
Yes. So, I mean, the other study which took the nucleus and they put it into a chick embryos, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it produced normal it's mice, actually, mice fertilized ovum, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it produced a normal, and they put the cytoplasm into the mice embryo, and it grown into a cancerous cells.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this has been replicated several times,
right?
You see, confirming the metabolic process is upstream and it's a cause,
mm-hmm.
while the genetic mutation is a downstream process, which is the sequence. This is the effect of the cause, actually.
Right. So trying to treat the gene problem is to ignore the fact that there's an existing metabolic problem which actually precedes it.
That's right. Because I think, yes, there is no problem actually for addressing the genetic issue and actually doing the surgery, the cutting, or doing the toxication, like say with chemotherapy or radiotherapy or things like that. There is no problem at all about that. But I think the very important issue is we need to create a happy terrain, because I think the terrain is very, very important here.
Right. So by terrain, you mean the environment of the body?
The environment of the body,
right.
Actually. We need to work on the environment of the body, because since the environment of the body has become hostile to the extent that it has caused, actually, a metabolic problem that has eventually resulted in genetic mutation and cancer causation. So I think we need to go back, because to work on the terrain and get it right, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be very, very helpful.
Right.
This is exactly what I do. And I do not really mind whether the patients would really want to work on their terrain only, or they are taking the conventional medicine. And actually, most of my patients are taking the conventional medicine interventions,
yes,
as well as having the functional medicine support.
Mm-hmm. So in this way, you would say this is really integrated medicine.
Yes, it is. It is integrated medicine, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
This is an area where both sides can work and can help the patient, because the patients are really desperate, for help, and they are really, they're needing a lot of care. First, to reassure them and to do something about their conditions. I mean, most of the time, you see, most of these patients, they come with the impression that, you see, this is a life sentence.
Yes.
They cannot get, and they are so worried, and they are so, and the family as well, actually,
yes,
everybody
yes.
would be worried with them, you see. So I think they need a lot of help and support.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're getting towards the end of the show. I want to just home in now on the specific ways in which functional medicine can help people with cancer. So it's clear that there's a fantastic amount on offer in the arena of prevention. But once somebody's been diagnosed, what stages can a functional medicine practitioner play a useful part in supporting a patient?
I think all the stages can get help from functional medicine. But it would be, I mean, the earlier the stages, the better the outcome.
Okay.
That's a very important point. But functional medicine actually can help the patient body to can help to create an inhabitable really body for cancer to exist.
Okay.
Because the two main important areas to cover in cancer is the fact that cancer depends entirely on sugar.
Okay.
This is really a very common fact, actually. Everybody knows that. And why? Because cancer cells are really turning back into a very primitive sort of cell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bacteria, for example, is very primitive.
Yes.
And how the bacteria get their energy? By fermenting sugar.
Okay.
You see?
Yes.
And cancer cells just do the same.
Right.
While the normal cell, they have got the advanced machinery to produce energy in a very effective way. You know,
right.
The mitochondria, which is the multicellular organisms have,
mm-hmm.
Have got a very sophisticated energy production system.
Okay.
Just to give you an example, if the primary system work, they call it glycolysis. The
mm-hmm.
process is called glycolysis. The biochemical process called glycolysis.
Yes.
Where the sugar is converted into pyruvic acid and eventually to lactic acid through a fermentation process, you see? But this process produces only 2 ATP, which is the energy units, the cellular energy units, only 2 ATPs for 1 unit of sugar.
Okay.
While the sophisticated cell, normal cell machineries convert the same 1 unit of sugar into a net of 34 ATP units.
34? Wow.
34.
It's an incredible difference.
It's an incredible difference, because this is a highly sophisticated energy system.
Yes.
While that one is a very primitive. This is why cancer would like to have as many as possible of sugar molecules.
Yes.
Because they need more, you see,
mm-hmm.
and they have got 20 times the receptors for sugar,
mm-hmm.
For insulin, which let the sugar in. They have got more than 20 times the number of insulin receptors to get more sugar into them.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
mm-hmm.
So because they depend on it. That's one issue. The other issue is, cancer cannot live in a highly oxygenated environment.
Okay.
So if you can increase the oxygen level, then that is going to be like an inhospitable environment for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can have interventions for this one and the other one. I mean, for the sugar and for the oxygenation, which is going to be very helpful to the patient.
Right. Right. Interesting. And I think that it's also interesting to note that whereas cancer requires a huge amount of sugar in order to grow and to create its energy, the converse is also being shown to be true, that the sugar itself can promote fermentation, can actually promote the process in happening. So that, you know, a poor diet which is over sugary is actually a kind of creating the ground base for fermentation to occur.
Yes, yeah. So this is why actually a cancer patient has to go for low sugar diet, low glycemic diet.
Yes.
They cannot really take anything like, say, a sugar, table sugar. They cannot take anything like rice because it's going to be converted completely into sugar, pasta and these things. Mm. And so they have to go into a low glycemic glycemic index and low glycemic load food.
Mm.
Again, actually, they need to go into a diet which is high in nutrients. And the most important nutrient, they call phytonutrients.
Yes.
You know, these different types of vegetables and fruits have got different colors.
Mm.
And these colors actually is their content of phytonutrients.
Okay.
And each color has got a meaning. So they need to take as many of the, what do you call it, the rainbow spectrum.
Yes.
Colors, you see, on daily basis.
Right.
And that is very important, actually, to help protection of cancer. And it can help also in the treatment of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, many patients, actually, they come with severe stress, you see.
Yes.
And they lose their gut completely because, you know, the stress response is just like, say, originally stress when you have got something danger, when you are in a jungle and you are chased by a lion, for example. So you'd like to run for your life. And by doing that, you see, you have to divert all your resources. The blood has to go to the brain, to the heart, to the muscle.
Yes.
To flee or to fight the danger, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So the gut would not be a priority. The reproductive system is not going to be a priority. So people lose their gut completely. They are not able to digest their food. You see, they are not able to absorb their food because they lose the digestive enzymes and they lose the absorptive surface of the gut, you see? So I normally work with them in two directions here. One direction is to help them to restore actually any nutritional deficiencies happening in them.
Right.
That's one issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue is to bring their gut back to into function.
Right.
Yeah, if you would like to restore the gut function, if you, and that is really a common problem with cancer patients, then you need to go through these 5 R.
Okay.
The first R is replace. And what you're going to replace, as I said, you see, with the stress response, you lose the gut function, and most of the gut function is due to the enzymes, the digestive enzymes produced by the gut. And the most important also is the hydrochloric acid in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to replace the hydrochloric acid, and we need to replace the acid and the enzyme, digestive enzymes, including the pancreatic enzymes. And sometimes, actually, we need to replace the bile as well.
Mm.
That's the first R, which is replace. The second R is remove. And most of the time, actually, there is some infection, whether it's a yeast or a bacterial infection. And you need to remove this infection by giving, actually, we don't really give conventional antibiotics, which also damage the microbiome. But we give something like, say, a natural antimicrobial agents, which can remove these things.
Yeah.
The third one is we need to repopulate the gut with good friendly bacteria.
Yes.
That is very important. And because you see nowadays the microbiome play a big role in treating cancer and actually in modifying actually most of the chronic health conditions. Hmm. Number four, the fourth R is repair. And because you see, when the gut wall is damaged, that it is going to create what is known as leaky gut syndrome, mm-hmm. where things which are not supposed to go across the gut wall into the bloodstream is happening. And to do that, actually, you need to put something like some elements like glutamine. The L-glutamine is a very good, really helpful way of repairing the gut wall.
Right.
The fifth R is to rebalance. So rebalance is including really the rest of the lifestyle. You need to rebalance the rest of the lifestyle, including the diet, the exercise, the relaxation, stress, sleep. So we need to adopt the healthy lifestyles regarding all these lifestyle areas, issues. Hmm. So I think this is the 5R, and I work with every cancer patient specifically to help them, you see, repair or get their gut really back into function. Because without the gut is very important, because previously we used to say you are what you eat, but I think the accurate thing is you are what you digest and absorb. Right. And without a good gut, you are not really digest, and you're not going to absorb, and you're going to be in nutritional deficiency, and you're going to create a lot of toxins, which is not really going to help the patients to restore health.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is another area which actually is very important. The other area which I normally work on is the detoxification.
Right.
Because most of the cancer is driven sometimes by toxins or by hormones, which are also some sort of toxins. For example, estrogen, which is a hormone, and it's drive the breast and the prostate cancer, you see? And the difficulty in these patients mainly is due to the fact that the detoxification system is not working properly.
Okay.
Particularly with heavy metals like mercury, or with estrogen, which is a hormone, you see, with aromatic hydrocarbons, which is all over in the environment, you see, on the car fumes and the well-done meats and things like that, you see. So their detox system is not functioning properly, and there is a lot of toxicity happening on them. So by giving their detox system a lot of support and reducing their toxin load, then actually you're creating a good terrain, a happy terrain,
yes,
which is going to fight the cancer as well.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
And the greater element in cancer patients I see in their intoxication of their minds.
Mm.
I think that is the greatest thing, because you see, most of them, they have got something like, say, they have been exposed to a lot of childhood, really, stresses.
Yes.
And they have been work stresses. They are building their career, for example, and career stresses, family stresses, marital stresses, you see, divorce, death of loved ones. There's always one story behind each and every cancer patient. There's always one psychological, emotional, you see, spiritual, social issue around that. And without addressing these issues, I do not really think anybody is going to get better.
Mm. Well, that's good to hear you say that as well. That's not really very much embraced by practitioners in conventional medicine, that view of things. One thing I want to just pop back to, you said earlier, just quickly before we finish, you said, well, everybody knows that sugar drives cancer. Well, that's increasingly true, except in one area, which is about the 40 years out of date that you mentioned, that, you know, your training jumped 40 years by doing functional medicine. And of course, very commonly, cancer patients are told by their oncologist that it doesn't matter what they eat when they have cancer, and that actually a bit of good, healthy junk food is just what they need to keep the weight on. So this, to me, is one of the tragedies of this 40-year gap, is that the science that's actually touted around in hospitals can be horrendously out of date and actually is doing a huge disservice to patients.
Yeah, I think that's true, because the conventional system actually to change has to take really several years for anything to be implemented. And this is because the system now has gone into protocols now. It's a protocol which has been formulated, and the protocol has to carry on for several years before it can be reviewed again. But science is really running very fast, because I think the development of science and technology over the last year is probably more than what has happened altogether before that time.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. I think you're maybe right. Yeah, exponential.
Yes. Yeah. And we need to be updated, particularly with something like cancer, because there's a lot of work is happening at the moment, which is helping. Just like, say, for example, I have got a patient who has got pancreatic cancer. And one of the things, she's an elderly lady, and she is really adamant, actually, she wants to get better.
Right.
And I have given her a little advice, and I looked into the research, and I have found that, you see, that you can now reduce the dose of chemotherapy to a minimal level by doing something like, say, insulin potentiation therapy.
Yeah.
You have heard about that. That's really becoming a very good tried technology.
Yes.
So, because what happens here, cancer actually loves sugar. And as I said, he's got about 20 times really more insulin receptors to suck any sugar coming into the body. You see, if you're going to put the chemotherapy with this sugar and this insulin, so it's going to be sucked into the cancer cell without really going around to the normal cells. So the damage is going to happen in the cancer cell mainly,
with
a little damage happening into the other body system. You see, and this, by doing that, you can reduce the dose actually to 1/5 or 1/6 or even 1/8 of the normal dose of chemotherapy. That's going to be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
But unfortunately, it's not available.
No.
Something as simple as that is not available. And we looked everywhere, we couldn't find it.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Well, this is what we're dealing with, and we have to press on and we have to push for change. So look, we're out of time. It's been really interesting to talk to you today, Dr. Sharif. Many thanks indeed for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much indeed for coming back to me about this subject. The cancer especially is very important to me, because I run quite a good number of groups. As I said, I see patients as groups as well, and I see patients as individual. And I think there is a lot which we could do to help these patients. Thank you very much indeed again for coming back to me about it.
Okay.
Dr. Sharif Ibrahim is the second doctor I've spoken to in recent months who has left a career in conventional medicine to offer other approaches to those with cancer. It's a heartening trend that I hope one day will result in changes within conventional medicine. As usual, you can find links to material from today's show on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Just click the show logo on the homepage. Lastly, a quick reminder that if you'd like to support Yes to Life by donning your running shoes and joining the Yes to Life 10K, it's on October the 6th, and you can find out all about the run and register at yestolife10k.org. That's yestolife10k.org. Thanks a lot for listening to the show. I look forward to introducing another expert guest to you in next week's show. Goodbye.